Hey, this is Otacon. You're listening to This Week in Geek with Mike the Birdman Dodd and the rest of the Twig crew right here on thisweekingeek.net. Are you listening? Snake? Snake? Snake!
Yeah. Uh-huh. So damn nerdy. I'll take you to the comic shop. I'll show you all the...
Hey guys, what's going on? Listening to, you are listening to, Beyond the Gauntlet, recorded semi-live from the future in a pocket space dimension that you cannot find. I'm Mike the Birdman Dodd, and I'm joined with...
Chris Peddle, the owner and operator of the Gauntlet.
Auld Lang, Jamie McBurney. How do
you want it? I'm Jeff DeHaan, and if you want to follow us on Twitter, find out the happenings goings on beyond the gauntlet, you can at Gauntlet Podcast, or you can even, if you're one of those Facebooky types, just type in Gauntlet Comics and Games. Oh, that's a mouthful. And you can check out what's going on at the store. Chris always posts up when he's having any kind of sales or tournaments, which are always a great time. And he's got video game tournaments too, so you can check that out on Facebook as well for all you social media types.
So yes, in today's show, we're going to be looking back at 2013, the year that was. We survived the Mayan apocalypse by a full year. So, I guess where do we start with this? I mean, we are going to do this by categories. It's going to be kind of a geek scorecard for the year.
Well, what we're going to talk about first, Mike, is we're going to go all the way back to the year 1993, and we're going to cover our trivia section.
Oh, I forgot
first.
About 20, that. Yes.
20, what is that, 30 years ago?
Yeah. Shut up. Now I feel old.
No, that's 20. There you go. Hope that
Actually,
helps.
Actually, I think.
So we had the question. The question of the week of the last podcast was, when traveling, where does Tony Stark normally keep his Iron Man armor? Mike, you claimed you had a good...
I think it's Pocket Dimension because it was the 90s, and him and Reed Richards were still pretty good friends. So. Yep.
Well, it was 93, so I think my answer isn't actually on there, and that is that he doesn't actually have armor. He's just so blindingly drunk he thinks he has armor.
He just thinks he's invincible. Yeah.
I think I'm going to go with the fact that I know that the Flash stored his in a ring.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with the briefcase on that one, Bob.
It was in his attaché case.
Which I kind of figured, too. And you know what? Even though it was 93, the movies kind of tie into that with the briefcase armor from Iron Man 2 that everybody loved.
And at the same time, the really awful Iron Man animated series... featured
Adventures?
A really great...
No, Armored Adventures was cool. The one from the 90s was shit.
Yeah, the one in the 90s, his girlfriend was Spider-Woman for some reason. Had some really... There was the two things about that series that were awesome. One was the really crappy CG that he would have when he was armoring up.
And the Green Mandarin?
One, the Green Mandarin. I was watching it once with my brother. It was like, maybe it was like last month. And we noticed that he was doing a computer scan... and the animators from wherever they were just grabbed a bunch of random North American newspaper clippings and put them up on the screen. And it was the most disturbing stuff ever. It was like Monk kills self, then, or no, kills family, then self, and like immolates other people. And they're just flipping through it. The 90s.
Was this back when Marvel was almost bankrupt?
Well, intellectually, for sure. All right, so we have a couple of 1993 homilies before we wrap up our little journey back in time, and we'll see what you guys can come up with. The first question, what happens when the Celestials arrive on your planet? A, they take one being that's the perfect sum of its race and absorb its DNA structure into themselves. B, they choose one being from that world to be the harbinger of that race. C, they judge whether life on the planet is suitable to exist. Or D, they play shuffleboard with Europe.
I'm going to say A.
I'm liking the become the harbinger one.
Yeah, okay.
I like harbinger one.
C, we're going to say judge. So we have...
So one of us is right.
Indeed. Well, they judge. They judge whether life is suitable to exist.
Woo-hoo! Golf clap, Michael.
Yay! Why did I know
all
that?
Right,
I didn't.
Next
guess.
One. Who owns the wonderfully named Sherwood Florist?
Oh, I already know
DC
this without even getting the
Jeff.
Options.
Go for it. I serve it up to you.
A lovely woman by the name of Black Canary. I don't know if she actually co-owned it with Ollie. She might have. It was when they were together. And a little side note: it actually got burned down, and they had to have a Sherwood Florist too.
They named their store the sequel.
Yes.
Yes.
Was it Sherwood Florist 2, The Quickening?
No, no, even floristier.
Sherwood, even floristier.
That was more florist.
Sherwood Florist 2, Electric Boogaloo, perhaps.
Points to you, sir.
Hey, what can I say? I'm a big fan of Breakin'. Dan Cassidy is better known as which hero? Blue Jay, the Creeper, Blue Devil, or Felix Faust?
Damn it, I know Tom Cassidy.
That, I believe, was the Blue Devil.
Did the Creeper?
Let's
no,
see.
It's not the Creeper.
Who's the Creeper then?
The Creeper was oh God, I'm drawing a blank his name, but he was the talk show dude. And it wasn't, I don't think it was Cassidy. Unless it was.
Yeah. It was Blue Devil.
Okay, yeah, I didn't think it was the Creeper.
Blue Devil had stood by that, and I'm sticking by that.
Great story. The whole thing was he was wearing a costume when he got his powers.
Yes, I love
and
this.
He could never take them off.
Yep.
Yeah. And it was a terrible costume. I would not want to have seen that movie.
I need to know this.
All right, there are two. There's, okay, we got three more here. And the last one's really great. But this one is a little bit of 1993 trivia for you. Plans are underway, were underway in 1993, for what major motion picture? Terminator versus RoboCop, Predator versus Alien, Terminator versus Alien, or Blade Runner 2?
I'm going to say Predator versus Alien just because I know that had been like in the works for the longest time.
Yeah, it's sat in development hell.
Like they had video games based on that for so long. Oh,
that was
the Creeper? It was Jack Ryder.
There we go.
Thank you.
And yes, it was Alien versus Predator.
Because I remember,
and that, and what they came up with was that.
Now, thing. Weird. I can actually tie a story to RoboCop versus Terminator. I gave Chris a book for Christmas, the Terminator Vault, the complete story of 1 and 2. And I was talking with the author, Ian Nathan, and Paul Verhoeven, the guy that wrote RoboCop and directed it, he directed it, right?
Yeah.
He was at a party with James Cameron. He was knocking people over to get to talk to James Cameron. He's like, I love your movie, because he's this very eccentric Swedish guy. And he's like, and James Cameron looks at him, he's like, yeah, I know, you ripped me off. He's like, oh, so sorry. I don't know why you went Japanese for a second.
How do you feel about Jesus allegories?
I'm the Asian Swedish.
I'm okay, terribly
moving
offensive.
Moving on. Hey, let's talk about Thor.
And let's.
Don't be Thor about this. Archon is one of the answers. Man, I'm totally drawing a blank here. Which one of the following individuals has never possessed the power of Thor?
Pat Sajak.
Archon, Dargo, Beta Ray Bill, or Sigurd Jarlsson?
Well, we know the answer isn't Beta Ray Bill.
Beta Ray Bill, but who would be of the other two? Archon, Dargo, or Sigurd Jarlsson?
I'm going
who
to
do you
say...
Think
I'm going to say the first guy.
I'm going to say Dargo just because... Mike said the first guy.
All right. Dargo sounds like an old, like, monster from a...
Arshon.
It was indeed Arshon.
Yes. Who the hell is Arshon?
Chris, you had all this out? Because I'm even drawing a blank on this.
Arshon was actually a villain of his that actually hailed from the same dimension as the Dark Elves, or the same world as the Dark Elves.
Oh.
And he was almost like a curse.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, he had the cursed package of powers, except he could also dimension hop as well.
What's happening over
as a bonus.
Yay.
And shoot lasers from his eyes.
Because, you know, who doesn't?
I thought everyone could at a certain
yeah,
point.
Yeah, well, it was the 90s. Forgive them.
All right. And this is the listener question. This is a history question. This one is a bit of a challenge. Jeff, who's Jack King Kirby?
Really?
No, I'm just asking you. Okay. This is a setup.
He is a legend.
Yes. Why?
Well, for creating with Stan Lee some of the most iconic characters known to comicdom, and ultimately giving them their appearance. I mean, Stan would basically describe a character, and Mr. Kirby would draw them how he thought they should look from what Stan was saying, and thus characters like Spider-Man and the Fantastic Four were born.
Exactly. And now, this bit of history, this is the question. Which one of the following was not a Jack Kirby creation? We have the Submariner, Captain America, Doctor Doom, or the Silver Surfer.
Oh.
So think about that one. Mull that one over.
I think I know the answer.
I have the answer to that already. Yeah.
I think.
But
I'm going to leave that for next time.
Leave that one. So think, mull that one over, see what you can come up with.
All right. Pull out your pencils, kids. It's time for the Geek Scorecard of 2013.
Where do we start with this one?
I'd say we should probably start with comics.
Well, you can and then move transition our way to the entertainment world.
Yeah, it'll be kind of a pop culture smorgasbord, if you will. Do we want to start with what we liked, what we didn't like?
I liked Avengers Arena. Sorry.
And Superior Carnage, Jared.
Yes.
So why don't we start off with you guys each want to like pick a couple things you liked and a couple things you didn't like, and then
sure.
we'll go around the table.
Sure.
Alrighty. So why don't we start with you, Jeff?
Okay. Well, what I've liked, and this might sound repetitive because I've mentioned these books on a couple other episodes, but the all-female X-Men title, I thought it was really good. I thought that and Battle of the Atom, the big event, really brought me back into the X-Men. I've read some other events, like I read Messiah Complex from a few years ago, and while it had great art and it was a good story and everything, it didn't really bring me back in.
Yeah,
I've read the occasional solo story over the last few years and stuff, like Get Mystique in the Wolverine series from a few years ago that Jason Aaron wrote. Fantastic story, and it really gave you a neat feel of the relationship between Mystique and Wolverine.
Yep.
But other than the occasional story like that, I haven't read a lot in probably close to a decade, probably a good 8 years of X-Men until now. And this book by Brian Wood and the current artists are Terry and Rachel Dodson really brought me back into it. And Battle of the Atom as well. I shouldn't take credit completely just to this book, not that it isn't good, but Battle of the Atom, there was different artists because it crossed over into all the books, but it's consistent. You can read it all as one story and not feel like, you know, some art is out of place compared to others.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love, as a whole, what they've done with the X-Men universe since the end of AVX. You know, how they've kind of had Cyclops has his own team, and they're kind of heelish, you know, they're kind of almost anti-hero, but they're still X-Men. And they've got, you know, the different teams, but they all have their own place. Each team is unique and kind of does its own thing, you know. And it's also nice to see an X-Men team that doesn't have Wolverine on it.
And who wouldn't really want one of those Cyclops with Wright shirts?
Those are awesome.
It's kind of cool, and
Here's the thing. I'll touch again on some of the X-Men stuff just because I know that I read everything. And
you must have some sort of a store where you can get all
It's amazing. You know, it's this pocket dimension at 14 Mill Street. You should check it out.
Careful, though. If you walk in, you might never come out. You might
exactly.
get lost in here.
Oh, it's a wandering shop.
Yes, it is. It is. You know, it gets up on its chicken legs and just runs away, Baba Yaga style.
Ooh, nice.
At any rate, the X universe, what's going on is mutants are starting to pop up again. They're starting to be born. For those of you who don't know the effects of this, during the event called House of M, the Scarlet Witch said, no more mutants. And if you know anything about the Scarlet Witch, which I'll tell you anyway, she has the power to basically be a giant deus ex machina. She affects reality, and whatever she wants to have happen, happens.
Whatever the writers want to have happen, exactly. She makes happen.
Exactly. So she basically becomes their get-out-of-jail-free card.
Yes.
So she said not a while ago, no more mutants, and only
198, I think it got whittled down to.
Yes, 198 mutants survived this. Every other mutant lost their powers or died because of losing their powers.
And the interesting thing with that, and what I liked about it, is it wasn't like they were just naturally normal per se, like they were, but like, for example, the Blob, he wasn't the Blob anymore. But he still had all this excess skin.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, unless you were someone like Jubilee, who actually did lose her powers, but her powers were like shooting fireworks. So she was basically
she got an upgrade.
She was basically a normal girl. But someone like Chamber, who like didn't have his lower jaw, you know, suddenly they were kind of in a real bad spot. So it was an interesting thing, and I applaud them for that kind of status quo shift, but I'm getting off topic. I'll let you continue.
On top. So basically what happened was they refound Scarlet Witch, and she kind of redid her thing, and now the mutants are coming back again. Mm-hmm. And some of the mutants that have popped into the Uncanny X-Men have some interesting powers. there is Gold Ball who is this fat
Mexican. My pinky was the key.
He's a fat Mexican kid that when you hit him, basically gold Nerf balls fly out of him. It's like,
what? Yeah, are you kidding me?
No, no, I'm not. There's another another girl that has the ability to basically freeze time. Which in like either herself or just bubbles of time, which in her first encounter, she froze the Avengers in a bubble of time and got away with it. they actually were in there for like 12 hours before finally they came out of it and didn't realize what happened. You also have another character who basically has the ability to make you like him.
Yes.
All right. He basically is this gay kid who... If you're talking to him, he starts taking on the traits of what you like in a person and starts putting off a pheromone that also makes you like him. So basically, if you're into dudes with handlebar mustaches, he'll suddenly become a dude with a handlebar mustache, and he'll do it gradually so you don't even notice this happening.
Codename best friend.
Yeah.
Well, no, pretty much. Like, I don't know what they're going to call him yet because they haven't done his name. But these are just some of the new mutants.
Well,
they're not quite as lasers from the eyes and, you know, claws and healing factor.
Well, that's
factor,
okay. And that's one thing that I've always liked about the X-Men is that they're not all pretty, you know, or it's not all super cool powers. Sometimes you kind of get the short end of the stick.
Yeah. There's another kid that can control life and death. He can either make something die flat out or bring it back to life flat out.
So, oh yeah, no, so, I remember him. He had a big role in.
It's
one
not
issue.
No, it's not Elixir.
It's
another guy.
It's
another kid.
Okay,
it's another new kid.
Oh, so. Okay. Well, never mind then.
At any rate, way to go, so, yeah, there's been some interesting stuff going on in the X universe. So right. back to you, Jeff. What else?
Okay,
would you like?
And on the flip side of things, and this will be a shock for people who have been longtime listeners, I have been loving Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo's Batman.
Okay, what? We'll get out of this.
Yeah,
I don't believe this at all.
Yeah,
but
you've never led us to believe that there's any sort of Batman affinity.
I don't understand this.
Yeah, this is coming out of nowhere, Chris.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I'm shocked.
Yeah,
I'm shocked.
You don't have to bring up DC books just to make us like you. We like you anyway. You don't have to do it.
Are you done?
I got a few more, but we only have an hour or so.
True enough. Woo! All right, but anyways, especially like... With what they've been doing for actually probably the better part of 2013, they had the very large death of the family, which was the heralded return of the Joker. Say what you will about his, you know, old face being strapped back onto his head. It added a certain creep factor. I mean, you can talk about the logistics of it, but at the same time, they're funny books. You know, if you're going to talk about the logistics of it, you got people that are flying. Or, you know,
let's face it. I mean, the Joker, even in his origin, where he became the Red Hood for a while, mm-hmm. As the head of the Red Hood gang, he's always been about basically wearing the face of somebody else and posing as them for a while. So it was kind of an irony in itself that he was posing as himself.
And that's a very good point. And it was a really great story. It was only 5 issues, which I was surprised when they first announced it. I thought for the Return of the Joker, they would have made it bigger. Now, there were some kind of...
Okay,
I don't,
bigger in the fact that every Batman book but Dark Knight five issues.
I was going to get back into that in a second. Well, some of them were only three. Those were kind of tie-ins, but it wasn't like a crossover. It wasn't like... You needed to read those other ones. They were all their own story. Now, they've released a collection called Joker, Death of the Family, which actually has every Joker issue from Death of the Family.
In chronological order.
Oh, jeez.
From all the books. But you don't need to. I only read the 5 issues from Batman, and I picked up, I think, an issue of Batgirl and maybe another issue of something
else. Just for
the
record, for those listening... Batman Death of the Family, the one that is just the 5 issues, is a $24.99 hardcover. Or you can get Joker Death of the Family, which is a collection of 20-something issues.
Including the 5 Batmans.
Including the 5 Batmans for only $29.99. Huh. So it's a much better grabbing Joker.
Yeah. It was a great story. Like I said, I've loved Snyder's writing on Batman. He does a fantastic job. I feel like he really knows the characters. Capullo's art, at the beginning of the New 52, I wasn't crazy about it.
Yeah, fair
but
enough.
But by the end of the Court of Owls story, which was like a year into it,
I warmed up to it. I enjoy his art now. After the death of the family, they had, I think it was a two-issue Clayface story, and then they jumped into Batman Zero Year, which has had some criticism because a lot of people are like, Year One is such an epic, you know, story and everything, and how can you have another like Year One and just call it Zero Year? And a lot of fans kind of had backlash to it.
Yeah.
But the thing is, excuse me.
I just have to clarify, are we getting, is this the segment where you cross over what you hated in comics?
No.
Okay, I just wanted to know.
No, I thought we'd do the likes and then we could go back.
Okay,
and
I wasn't sure if you were crossing over because there were some criticism marks there. I just wanted to clarify for the audience.
No. I've actually really loved Zero Year. It's just Snyder has said that they can't really still use Year One, as great of a story as it was, because a lot of stuff doesn't apply anymore. Like Catwoman was never a prostitute in the New 52 and things like
that. Frank Miller writes a book and then she will be.
Yeah, but what I'm
it's
saying
a damn shame.
But what I'm saying is there's other elements of the story too, but I mean it doesn't work the same way. So they have to find something else to so Zero Year ties into that and it's completely different. It's, you know, he might take elements from Year One, but it's completely different and it's been a fantastic story. Great focus on the Riddler. And one of the things that I've loved about Snyder is he does a really fantastic job of his villains.
Yeah.
You know, like he writes Batman and the heroes and everything really well, but I love his writing of the villains. When he wrote Joker, I heard Mark Hamill's voice. You know, well, Mark Hamill's Joker voice.
And he did a good job with the Court of Owls, too.
And the Court of Owls, like exactly.
The main villain in that was really well done.
His villains, he does such a fantastic job. And the Riddler takes center stage for a great deal of Zero Year, which is still going on. It's like an epic, like...
It's I think a full it's year. It's 12 yeah, issues, right?
It's 12 or possibly even 13, but I think the last issue might be kind of a prologue.
What didn't you like?
What didn't I like? I had something.
Something.
Everything
didn't have
Marvel.
Batman, probably.
You know what? Let me think on that for a second. Go around to maybe Jamie or you for what you guys liked, because I had something and then I got off topic and now I can't remember it.
Jamie, you're up to bat.
Batman tends to do that to him.
Yeah.
Okay. I have to preface what my main thing with by saying this. I tried Breaking Bad for the first two seasons, and I hated it.
Get the hell out of here!
I know this was going to be contentious. But I couldn't stand
it. We're talking comics, though, right?
I know, and but this is tying in because the Dan Slott Superior Spider-Man right now is, for me, I get why people like Breaking Bad. I get why people like watching someone do what he thinks is the right thing for not necessarily the right reasons and try to make decisions based off of this sort of skewed sense of morality.
Doc Ock Spider-Man is the danger.
And that's what I'm saying. And I really, what I didn't, you know, for all the things that I didn't like about Breaking Bad and about like Mad Men and these other shows that are relatively dark, I really loved everything that Dan Slott's been doing in the whole Superior Spider-Man universe. And the really cool thing about about these books is that he's really making and managed to put together a really cool spider universe. Every book that is connected to that is a really solid read. You can just read Superior Spider-Man and get enough of the story. You can look at Superior Spider-Man Team-Up, which is written by Christopher Yost, which is really excellent, which is sort of a different version of it. You can look at
The Foes?
The Superior Foes is written by Nick Spencer, which is really, really fun. It's sort of, if you liked Hawkeye, you will like Superior Foes. There's some really great sequential art stuff going on in that I really enjoy. And then
I just found
Scarlet
it fun
Spider.
Because it was looking at the very B-list supervillains in their daily lives.
And they're trying so hard.
They're trying so very hard to be villains.
The first issue of Superior, I think it's Superior Foes.
Yeah.
You know, he goes in and he's like, wait a minute, you guys are the Sinister Six now? God, they just let anybody on this team.
And they had the parole officer who was played by Mach 1, I think.
Yeah.
Mach 1 is a parole officer for reformed supervillains, and it's so much fun just to watch them tool around and try to sort of... And the same thing, that what I really liked about those books and the whole Spider family is that they're looking at a lot of really deeply flawed people. Making, in the same way that you watch Breaking Bad and you know that it's going to end up terrible for them, you know that at some point the whole house of cards is going to fall down for Spider-Man. or Doc Ock, whatever. You know it's going to fall down. You're waiting for it to happen, but you still want to watch the whole process of it. And it's really, really been enjoyable to follow it like week by week.
What I've really enjoyed with it is the fact that in his own way, he really does want to be a hero.
Yes, and that's what's
so
great.
But he's still got the villain mentality where he feels like he needs minions.
Yes.
He needs to, like...
This person needs to learn a lesson. They have to die.
Yeah, he's still got his megalomaniac attitude towards everything.
One of my favorite panels...
He keeps calling people dolts.
One of my favorite panels was whenever he's creating his little spider drones. And he's got this huge, maniacal, evil laugh to him. And it's Peter Parker's body in this lab coat, the goggles, the whole bit, and he's like, love that panel so much. Like, from what I've read of it, it's a fun book. It doesn't take itself too seriously, and this has kind of been the core of Spider-Man from the get-go. It's like, he's one of those few characters who can perfectly balance that line between being funny, silly book, but also being deadly serious, and he can go from one second to the other, and it doesn't feel out of place.
I mean, my favorite Superior Spider-Man moment was actually before they started up
the Spider-Man team up.
And it was an Avenging Spider-Man, and it was right after he became Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And he broke into one of his underground lairs underneath the river in Manhattan, and he breaks in to go find some of his technology, and a Doc Ock monologuing computer system cracks on.
Yes.
And starts, you know, you've broken into my lair, you imbecile. And he's like
really
monologuing.
Like
and he's like, did I really sound like that? You shut up, you dolt. And he like goes about and he's like, no wonder Spider-Man always won.
Yeah.
And he realized how much of a douchebag he really was. But yet he still acts like that.
And it's so much fun. And there's really, and that's coupled with moments like, Spider Octopus, his girlfriend is a little person, and in the most recent issue, which has been really good about integrating Venom, in the most recent issue, he like gets Aunt May. He's just given her this like surgery to fix her hip and done this amazing thing. She comes in, and you know, she's like everyone's grandmother, and she's like, "If you have grandchildren, are they going to be okay?" And he just flips out on her as a like, but it's that sort of perfect balance where you can imagine how that would have happened as Peter Parker. But
as long as he doesn't say, "Hey, you didn't complain when I dated you." You know.
Yeah.
For anyone who doesn't know, they did date.
And the thing is, he's actually done. He like every time he does something horribly wrong as Spider-Man, it's actually as a good thing too.
Yes.
Okay. For example, again, the most recent issue. Okay, he goes and he rips the Venom symbiote off of Flash Thompson, but gives him legs at the same time.
Yes.
It's like, okay.
It's just so
By
much,
the way, you can
yeah.
walk again, yeah. but I removed your Venom symbiote from you and it's mine now. You know, it's like one of those...
It's fantastic. Like, as much as people criticized it, it's you don't want to see it end.
You know,
it's going to. It's like you were saying, Jamie, how you're watching this slowly fall apart. Like a game of Jenga. You know, eventually that tower is going to fall.
You know.
But you almost don't want it to happen because the ride is so much fun.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it is. It's gotten back to, like, it got to the point, especially after Brand New Day Spider-Man, where reading Spider-Man felt like a chore. And this has gotten back, and the reason I like this so much is that I'm having fun with Spider-Man again.
Yeah, that's for me,
okay,
too.
Okay, and I think that is why I like it so much. And whether I want Doc Ock to remain Spider-Man, or Peter Parker's going to come back, and you know Peter Parker's going to come back.
Yeah.
Because
they're not letting that cash cow die.
No, exactly. And that's the fun part. I mean, when he marches through Hell's Kitchen with giant spider mechs and topples Kingpin's empire, you know, you're like going to yourself, slightly overkill, but he managed to stop Kingpin and his criminal empire.
On
you
one
know,
hand, they're not letting that Peter Parker cash cow die, but you know what? Let's let this new cash cow graze for a little longer.
Yeah.
You know? Well,
nice extended metaphor.
Exactly.
Not too bad. Is there anything else you liked in the
for
way
For me,
of
the other, the major thing has been Spider-Man. I've really enjoyed that, but I'm also really enjoyed how Marvel's done really well at bringing a lot of the cosmic books back. They've done a really good job. I was really hesitant to read a lot of the new Nova, but the new Nova's been really fun. New Guardians of the Galaxy. I've really enjoyed Infinity, and pretty much anything that Hickman or Fraction have been doing at Marvel has been just outstanding. A lot of fun and a good read.
Now I know Jamie, that you delve into the occasional non DC or Marvel book. Has there been anything outside the big two that you've been enjoying?
It's Image has had a really fascinating year. What I've really enjoyed, the books that I've enjoyed from Image, have actually been a couple by Nick Spencer, the guy who's writing Superior Foes of Spider-Man. He writes Morning Glories, which as a series is sort of like Lost in the sense that stuff just happens and you have to just let it go because you assume it will all make sense, and it's been really fun to just keep up. I've been reading the trades for that, and it's been really, really strange, but really fun as well. And another series that he's written is called Bedlam, and it's all about a supervillain who basically gets a frontal lobotomy and is trying to become a better person, but at the same time, he's fighting sort of his demons. It's a really, really great read. The first trade's out now.
And do you find that book has parallel drawings to maybe Superior Spider-Man?
And there's a lot of really cool superhero things going on as well. Brian K. Vaughan's Saga is a lot of fun. It's very much... Image has been really weird this year because it feels like Marvel's been giving a lot of their writers license to just go to Image and do whatever they want. A lot of the times what they're given license to do is just sort of let their ideas run wild, and it can be good or it can be bad. Like, I haven't enjoyed... I tried reading a couple issues of Hickman's East of West on Image, and what was the other one that I tried reading as well? There was another one as well, but like East of West was just too much Hickman. Where I was like, okay, you know, there's no reining in of his ideas. He's just, I'm going to keep doing stuff. And I didn't really enjoy that one as much. But I'm really happy that Marvel's allowed their writers, like Rick Remender's got Black Science out now, which I've heard really good things about, and I'm looking forward to checking out an issue of. But I'm really happy that they have a place to go put these books out, these fun sort of creative stories. There is a potential that they go the same road as, like, Why the Last Man, which started off really great and then sort of fell apart at the end and had, like, 10 issues on an all-female Shakespeare troupe. We get it. But I would say that Image has probably had the most interesting stable. If you want to try a new book and you're not really sure, pick up a number one from Image. It's a really interesting, and it'll be an interesting roll of the dice for books.
Cool.
Yep.
How about you, Chris? We know obviously you did enjoy Superior Spider-Man as well, and all the.
Oh yeah, so I'm not gonna repeat that argument, nor am I gonna repeat the X-Men or the Batman arguments that you gave. However, some of the other books that I really enjoyed this year, the Superman Batman book that DC started with Greg Peck and
that. Jay Lee.
Jay Lee, yeah. was very well done. That's so good. Far. And yeah. The second story arc, jumping into it now, has been very, very entertaining as well. Both solid reads. I love the Jan Lee art. It took the surrealness of the story and combined and worked. And this is an example of when an artist and a writer meshed together, worked well.
Yes.
Okay. Because of the fact that the art fit the surreal nature of the book. And the new arc that started has a new artist, and it fits very well to what's going on with that.
That's cool.
Is it Brett Booth?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's really interesting, too, because he's written the comic instead of vertical, it's horizontal. So you read it, flipping it up, as opposed to turning it left to right.
Like the whole book?
Yes. It's kind of cool.
I just want to do a flip book thing and see if...
Like, yeah, it's really cool. Yeah. I don't want to get too much in the story to blow things for people, but the whole premise of the story is a bunch of kids think they're playing a video game, and they're somehow found a way to control Batman and Superman.
Wow, that sounds wild.
And it also has Mongul in it. So let's just say Mongul shows up, and shenanigans are afoot. But
nice.
that seems like one of those ideas that could either be the best thing or the worst thing.
But
ever.
So far it's working, and I love the way they're going with it.
That's really cool because it does, like you said, it could be awesome or terrible. So yeah. I want it to succeed. I want it to be a good story.
Because so far, and the horizontal nature of the book has been kind of fun too, because, you know, you get a double page spread the opposite way when they do the big shabow.
So something's really tall.
Exactly. Exactly. The other thing, couple things that I've been enjoying in the comics. I also have enjoyed. I'm crossing into DC territory again here, Jamie. So no evil looks.
I'm all good.
The Green Lantern story arc that was the Lights Out story arc, where a character they introduced to the universe called Relic. Basically was a survivor of the previous universe, kind of Galactus style.
Right, right.
And he said he basically went after the Lanterns, saying that the previous universe, the reason the universe failed was all the Lantern cores of that universe, or the Light Bearers as they were called, drained the emotional spectrum of the universe, causing this universe to implode upon itself.
I thought it just made them really apathetic.
Well, no, and apparently the light is what holds it together. And the Guardians, basically, who are the super cops behind the Green Lantern corpse,
right?
Basically were all destroyed by this Relic guy. And the universe is basically there. He's coming, and they find out that, yes, indeed, all their lantern rings bring the universe closer to death every time they use them.
Huh.
So now they've jumped into an era of the Green Lanterns where the lanterns are trying to use their rings less.
Nice.
Because of the fact that it's slowly a ticking time bomb on the universe.
I like that.
Kyle Rayner in the book, the White Lantern, who basically mastered all the emotional spectrums, sacrifices himself to replenish the pool of light. So the Lantern Corps don't, like, kill the universe in, like, 5 days.
And is this the first arc of the guy who took over from Geoff Johns, yeah?
And it's called Lights Out. And it was fantastic. It was a really, and some horrible things happened in the comic book. Like I said, Kyle Rayner dies.
Well, it wouldn't be a DC book, frankly.
Right. Okay. Let's. Spoiler alert here, but like Oa blows up. Relic destroys Oa. I mean, so.
Jeez. I hope he does it accidentally.
So Mongol. That's you. What? So the new home planet for the Green Lanterns is actually Mongol, the living planet.
Oh, Mogo.
Mogo, sorry.
Mogo, the living... That's
is
okay,
now
that's
the, is now the new home.
So I guess now he does socialize.
All over different sectors and stuff. It's awesome. So
he does socialize now.
True
yes.
enough, yes. No
so
choice.
At any rate, that's kind of where that went. And I thoroughly enjoyed that arc.
Nice.
And it was very hard for me because after Geoff Johns left Green Lantern, I didn't think they could salvage Green Lantern because that was Geoff Johns' baby.
Well, he rebuilt it.
And like, he rebuilt it from the ground up. And it has
literally
been...
Literally from rebirth.
Yeah.
You know, whenever he brought back Hal Jordan and just continued on.
And just recently, I also want to touch on, breaking away again from DC and Marvel here, that it's only 2 issues deep so far, but so far it has been a brilliant ride. Army of Darkness. Okay, it kicks off right where the movie left off, and it's been very, very well done. If you were the campy horror guy, it's been a solid read.
Has the classic has shown up? I hope.
Oh yeah.
Okay, good. Because you can't do that without it.
Oh yeah. So anyway, that's what I enjoyed. Cool. How about you, Mike?
Comics that I read this year that I really liked. I really liked Jim Zubkovich's run on the Pathfinder comics. Those are really solid. Actually really got me into the world for that. They actually released a hardcover book this year that looks like a Pathfinder source book.
Oh, that was the greatest thing about that. Is
that was so
you
cool.
can actually put it in your shelf with all your other Pathfinder books and it fits.
That'd be really cool, yeah.
And they give you character stats and everything. It's really sweet.
And that's actually probably a great way for someone who's looking at getting into Pathfinder, but they're not sure, instead of buying a source book or something like that. Buy the comic. If you like the comic, then you know you'll like that world.
Yeah, and
or vice versa. If you play the game and you want to try getting into a comic book, you can go
the
reverse way.
Find a comic, and then you can kind of branch out from there.
Build off that. That's awesome.
I mean, if you pick up the individual issues, I know the first 5 or 6 come with pull-out maps that you can do. They all get, and the neat thing is they all start out as level 1 characters. So if you didn't want to make your own, you can take here's Valorous. go to town, which I think is really, really, really neat. The IDW My Little Pony, is it? Yeah, they do it. I've been reading the Ghostbusters as well this year, like that. Avengers Arena, like I mentioned earlier. Sad that that's over now.
So how does Ghostbusters fit into, I cannot believe I'm saying this, Ghostbusters continuity? This is not a phrase I thought I would ever use after 1992.
It's
what is the Ghostbusters continuity?
It's a thing.
I know. I find that
it's its own thing. It's best if you just poke it with a stick.
Yeah,
and walk
it's
away.
Best if you just read it, and it's its own thing. Although it works, though. I'm trying to think of what else I read. What else I really like this year.
Reading any of the X-Files book? I know you're.
Yeah, I don't know. Chris, did you put away the new X-Files stuff for me?
I haven't had anything new come in for it, so I'm not sure what's going on.
Okay, I'll have to double check, because I know in 2014, next month, it's like the X-Files and the Lone Gunman get their own book or something like that. I don't know. Because I know they're back somehow. They faked their deaths in Jump the Shark.
I hope they hate cancel that one, too. Oh. Because the Lone Gunman TV show, man.
I love
that.
That
episode was so bitter. Oh. Fine, they're all dead.
So we should jump into the hates then.
Yeah, well.
Comic hates.
I could not find a Marvel book that consistently excited me outside of Avengers Arena. And I wanted to get back into Marvel because of the whole Marvel Now.
Yeah,
because I'm like, all right, cool, everything's restarted. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And I recommend
trying the first trade to Superior Spider-Man.
And PG-13.
Yep, there you go. I take the PG-13 on this one.
Oh, I never get to.
Me either.
But yeah, I felt this year more so than most. For any of the big two, I couldn't get into anything really. Although all the licensed stuff was super accessible.
Well, you're really our licensed guy. Like, that's what you go for, which is cool. So, I mean, that's fine. So you have a better idea of that than we do. So,
yeah.
And it's the licensed stuff has always been something that's kind of neat to, gravitate to anyways, because
it's already established.
Exactly. If it's something that you're interested in, you already kind of have.
There is one licensed event that is transpiring currently as we speak that I absolutely thoroughly enjoy.
Is this that crossover one?
This is the Masters of the Universe crossover with DC.
Unfortunately, I missed the first couple, so I'm waiting for the trade.
I have seen some art from that, and that just looks amazing.
Dude, look, all I can say is when the trade comes out to this, Jamie, you need to check it out just to see it because it has been good. I
fully intend as a longtime He-Man and the Masters of the Universe fan and a DC fan, when this comes out in a collected edition, it will be mine.
Okay,
yes.
Just to give you a tad backstory to what goes on here, okay, just to set you up for the book. All right. Skeletor has found a way to contact Darkseid and has bridged the gap between universes, and some of the cast of the Justice League gets sucked into the Eternia universe, and some of the Eternia universe gets sucked into the DC universe. And let's just say He-Man in his magical sword versus Superman.
Superman's weak to magic.
Exactly. Let's
hello, is this thing on? Yeah. Is there anyone over there?
Oh, massage chair.
Skeletor looks so much more badass in this than he did in the old cartoon.
Does he look as good as he did in like the Frank Langella version?
Oh,
in the old
it's amazing.
The universe?
Anyway.
The shiny version?
Jeff, what did you not like?
All right, I can probably keep a lot of this short and sweet. Okay, first of all, Infinity. And we established that if you listen to our last episode, it wasn't so much anything of the story as much as it was just confusing the lack of organization.
It was weirdly marketed as something towards people like as like a number one as a first time reader thing when it was not in any way. Yeah. It was really mismarketed.
Another thing that I'm not crazy about, and I actually haven't read a lot because as of this recording, they've only released a zero issue. The Harley Quinn solo comic.
Yeah.
And my problem with that, I'm not even going to get into the whole controversy of the drawing contest.
Yeah.
The problem I had with it was quite simply that they seem to be turning Harley Quinn into DC's version of Deadpool. Like, she's breaking the fourth wall. She's having all these madcap adventures and this and that. And
crazy
it's like,
capers.
And that character, I mean, she started off as a throwaway character on Batman the Animated Series and became so popular that they made her canon and brought her into the DC universe. So it's like, if they're going to, if that character means that much to people, to just have throwaway books like that is just annoying. So that's another one.
They're currently showing off the DC versus Masters.
Sorry, it's very hard to focus when someone is showing me something. That's like
I have this,
Dark,
right, Chris?
Orko. Yet no one has made the portmanteau.
What the crap?
Because that would, of course,
I have this, I'm pretty sure, right?
Dorko.
No, you don't.
Before I leave, give me both.
You need a copy of Dorko.
Damn right.
Dorko. Oh, God.
I unfortunately don't have the first issue.
Oh, you better find it.
Those were the main things. The Harley Quinn comic and Infinity were two big things that I didn't like. Oh, another thing. I'm hesitant to put this in the what I didn't like category because I can understand why it happened. But the death of Damian Wayne.
Yeah.
While I'm fine with the fact that Grant Morrison's like, this is what I had planned all along and everything like that. And that's true.
Just taking his toys and going home.
He became such a popular character and he was so much fun to read.
Yeah.
It didn't even have to be just Morrison. It's like anybody who picked up this character. He had crossovers in, this wasn't just this year. This was actually in 2012. But he had crossovers in the Stephanie Brown Batgirl book. And their exchanges were fantastic.
Yep.
You know, Batman and Robin. His exchanges with Dick Grayson when Dick Grayson was Batman. Damian Wayne was such a fantastic character, and it was sad to see them kill him off.
And even in the New 52, the Batman and Robin by Tomasi was really well done.
They really
didn't change anything
about Damian Wayne.
Relationship dynamic.
And he was such a compelling character, and for such a young character, and the backstory of how, you know. Yeah, I was really disappointed that he died, more so after the fact. Like, when he did, I was like, oh, I understand, that's fine. And if Morrison says that was his plan with Batman Incorporated all along, that's cool. And then it was kind of like, you don't know what you got till it's gone. It's like, after a few months of Damian Wayne being gone, suddenly it's like, oh, wow, he really was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So what about you, Jamie? What did you not like?
Well,
and don't just say DC.
Well, I was
going to
say, you could sum up, Jeff thought his was short. Mine's just two letters. It's DC. It's been such a frustrating. I mean, the downside is DC has nothing for me right now aside from like All-Star Western and a couple of Vertigo books. The upside is I'm reading a lot more really great Marvel stuff. But it's really been a hell of a year for me in DC because I started off reading tons of the books, and systematically everything I was reading either got canceled, just completely lost me and trotted off into the distance without me. And it's just been really annoying because, I mean, I've got boxes and boxes of DC that I really still love. Like, I love the old Legion of Superhero stuff. I love a lot of the space stuff. And a lot of my characters have been sort of shuffled off and ignored. And for me, it's the weirdest thing and sort of what's emblematic for the whole thing. My whole experience with DC has been, I think, in December, they released Justice League 3000, which was originally finally came out. I think it was originally supposed to come out in October. Then they fired Kevin Maguire.
Yeah, yeah.
Then they hired Howard Porter, the guy who did JLA in the 90s. Then they just released it with absolutely no fanfare. Like, it started off, people were really excited because they had the Justice League International team. They had some really good buzz going. People were excited. Mm-hmm. And then they systematically took that buzz apart, puked the book out into the open market, and it doesn't do anything. They're not supporting it. So I've had just issues with DC in general. And it's not, I understand what they're doing. I don't see there's anything wrong with it because, hey, it's successful. Sure, go for it. But it's just not
it's not a personal hate thing per se. Like you said at the beginning, 1 year ago, you were collecting a ton of DC books.
Yeah.
And systematically, you know, it didn't happen. It's not like you were just like, I'm going to be completely anti-DC. You've got merit for why you feel the way you feel.
For me, it's just been, it's the worst thing for me because these are characters that I'm interested in, but DC has made a bunch of choices that aren't aren't what I'm looking for. The good side is that I've really been enjoying a lot of the Marvel books. I'm excited for a lot of Marvel stuff. And when we talk about 2014, there's a lot of really cool Marvel stuff going on. And I really cannot recommend enough. All-Star Western has been awesome. And continues to be awesome.
And it's, I still stand by my shock of thinking that that was going to be one of the first ones canceled in the New 52.
I am surprised every single week that they are not announcing its cancellation.
And that's because... great. That does take me to one more thing really quick that I didn't like. So far, I'm still getting it because I'm invested and it's an event. But honestly, with Forever Evil, so far... the first three issues, the only thing I really I'm invested in is what's going to happen to Dick Grayson.
What I'm invested in?
The story itself is okay. I don't hate it. I shouldn't say it's something I dislike, but it's not necessarily living up to the expectation that I had for it yet.
I have really enjoyed keeping up with DC, even though I'm not buying the books. Mm-hmm. I will occasionally see some great pictures from some of the issues. Like, I think it was number 3 where Ultraman crushes Black Adam's face.
Oh, yeah, that was fantastic.
You're just looking at me, and like, I just...
Try saying Shazam now.
Yeah, no more words, Crush. And I'm just like, oh, DC.
Well, mind you, there was another fantastic Ultraman moment from that, which was when he busts through Lex Luthor's corp, steals his kryptonite, crushes it, heats it up with his vision, then snorts it, then goes, I am the super again, and then flies off. I mean, that was...
Wow.
Because Ultraman, being the opposite of Superman, kryptonite powers him, and it's the sun... that but actually
does
hurts
he have to snort it?
That's the
quickest way to get it.
He's like pounding against the wall.
So he's like a superpowered cokehead. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yep. Ultraman is a kryptonite cokehead.
Yeah, he's freebasing kryptonite.
Yep.
It would have taken too long to be
that panel was worth the price of the first issue.
Oh
my god.
Oh yeah. I mean,
that's like hate reading.
Well, that's
best
that's
right
what
there.
I'm saying. Has DC done something stupid today? Is just okay. Been
oh god.
When it comes to Forever Evil, I haven't realized that a comic book is so bad, but enjoyed it so much since All-Star Batman and Robin.
Yes, and that's why I was hesitant to actually put it on the bad list, because it's almost so bad it's good at times.
Oh, yeah.
I, as a fan of the Dick Grayson character, I'm really curious where they are going to go with that. Like, that's the only serious thing that I kind of like about it. The rest is almost like, oh my god, what are you doing?
It's
you
know? Like, come on, Cyborg's has a virus in him that is the evil version of Cyborg, and all of his metal parts just run off and leave him this husk that Batman drags through the sewers to get back to the lab. And let's be honest, whatever's left of him is dead. Batman dragged him through the sewers, swimming with parasites, and he's like, yeah, fix this guy up.
They might have put him in something. I mean, before they got sucked away or whatever happened, I think the Green Lantern from one of the Justice Leagues kind of, you know, put him in protect. I got nothing.
Do you know, and you know where they are, where the villains or the heroes are? They are sucked into the
alternate Firestorm.
Version of Firestorm,
yes, right.
Named,
yes,
of course, Deathstorm.
Yeah.
Because, of course, it is.
You know, because they have a skull and everything.
So, yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I am enjoying DC in the sense that I love watching what's happening. But, yes, I cannot read any of their books.
Okay, so here comes my harp chord when it comes to the comics. I really, really only have one gargantuan thing that happened this year that pissed me off above all other things, and that is the Twilightization of Lobo.
Oh.
Yeah, yes. That was pretty friggin' stupid.
Okay, so you took one of my favorite fun characters and you turned him into to Edward from friggin' Twilight.
To get some clarification on this, feel free and check back to our What's Up with DC episode.
Exactly.
But, yeah, the fact that they made Lobo look like this giant pussy fart, I can't get over that. He looks like a wuss.
The term is queef. Let's be. if we're going to be offensive, let's at least be accurate about it, okay? But my favorite thing about Lobo is his gun chucks with hooks on. He's got nunchucks that are guns with hooks on the end.
I know.
It is like DC is basically
every 13-year-old boy.
13-year-old boys who are like, how about he has guns?
Which is funny.
How about he has guns with swords? How about he has guns with swords that are nunchucks?
Which is really funny because they let Rod Liefeld go.
I know. It's like, who else is going to run it? Oh, it's so awesome.
Okay. On another note, yes, I will pitch something in negative for Marvel as well.
Go for it.
Even though we talked about this the last episode
at length.
I do not like where Marvel's going with what they did with Infinity, with making it hard to follow.
Yeah, and that was one of my dislikes. And you were grabbing those Masters of the Universe books at the time, but that was my top dislike, was Infinity and the poor organization with it.
Exactly. So those were my two really big pet peeves, I guess, about this past year when it came to comics. So let's jump on to the next topic.
All right.
Switch the entertainment spectrum to television and movies.
Woo. Well, this year, in terms of geeky entertainment, there's definitely been no shortage of it. Arrow came out swinging. It really did.
And this is the second season, I believe?
Yep, yes. Second season. We now have The Flash.
Oh, yeah.
Which is pretty kick-ass. Barry Allen.
And Solomon Grundy.
So I'm interested to see what's going to happen with that. Walking Dead started out really friggin' slow. Now, if you've seen the mid-season finale, holy crap.
I haven't, by the way.
I'll just say this. It's awesome. It's legitimately the best episode this season.
You know, the part...
No,
the
second best. Second best.
Yeah. Just to put it out there, the most shocking thing about the last episode, the last Walking Dead episode, and I know you haven't seen it, so I will be gentle with this, is...
It took this long?
Well, is it took this long to get to the point.
Yeah.
Right?
But that's the disadvantage and advantage of long-form television, because I like what they did with the governor. Yeah. The fact that they put him on this path to redemption, I'm like, oh my God, this is real. This could be really awesome. I mean, this reminds me of the third season episode where they find the guy that Rick... the guy who helped Rick in the first episode.
Oh, yeah. I've only watched the first episode of Walking Dead this season. I might wind up waiting till the DVDs.
No, just do it before February. Trust me.
I'm gonna try.
I will download these and put them on a flash drive for you.
You know what? You do that, I'll watch it.
All right.
That's my problem. I'm not so computer-y.
We do not condone pirating.
I've wound up
pirating
with my share of viruses because I'm not a very internet-friendly type.
I will show you where to go. I'll show you where to go after the show.
There was a site I used to use, and it went down.
Well, do you have Rogers Cable?
No.
Damn. We will talk after the show.
We will, indeed.
But yeah, I'm trying to think of what else has really done well this season. I've heard mixed things about CW's Beauty and the Beast, which is...
My wife watched the first season of that. I was usually in the room at the time. It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't horribly a CW show. And this is going to be the first season. I don't know how the second season has been.
Supposedly better.
It wasn't a CW show to the extent of like Vampire Diaries or anything like that. But at the same time, it was... Still a CW show.
But at the same time, there is no other Beauty and the Beast than Linda Hamilton and Ron Perlman.
I
don't care what anyone has to say.
I stand by that too.
Kitty, Ron Perlman, Uber Alice. That's what I'm
trying to think of what other shows are on. Game of Thrones isn't about till next year, right? Okay. I haven't even caught up with that, and I really need to. What else is on television right now that's nerdy?
Shield.
Shield is finally starting to get its like shit together. I think next.
Now we're hard R.
I think next episode is the mid season finale for them. Or wait a second, no. By the time this episode airs, the mid season finale should have already aired. So I'm excited for the shows. Finally, start to pick up steam. They're talking about Centipede. They've talked about Extremis.
Yep. Well,
we've had Chikari. We've had Asgardians.
Here's the thing with any Whedon show. It's always a slow burn. It always takes a bit to hit its stride. Mm-hmm. So
I think they're all going to build. Like, I mean, rumor has it the season finale is going to either lead into or tie into Captain America: Winter Soldier.
Yeah. And well, it should.
Yeah. It's just a matter of, like you said, it's the slow
burn. I did enjoy the fact that they did do an episode that it acknowledged
Thor 2.
Thor 2, yeah. Dark World.
Without needing to see the movie if you hadn't.
Exactly, yeah. Because it kind of gave a salute to it, saying they were cleaning up after it, but still progressed into its own plot.
And they've even acknowledged it twice.
Yeah.
Because there's one episode where they talk about finding the Asgardian who stayed behind on Earth, and then the teleporting guy.
Peter McNichol, which was so great.
Which, yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. And then they talked about the guy who was teleporting between dimensions because it was leftovers of the remnant of between the merger of worlds.
Was Vigo. Maybe he's with Goo.
One other show that I think did really well this season, or at least up to mid-season, was Comic Book Men.
Yeah.
Did really well. A lot of really neat collectibles on that show this season. Highlight for me being the USS flag.
You know what my highlight for Comic Book Men was? Mike, your episode.
I thought I was going to be in the premiere, but they cut me into Dukes of Jersey, episode 7. Man, I've been waiting to talk about this for friggin' months because they had me like under this huge NDA, like as thick as a phone book. And yeah, it was so much fun doing that. So.
I just have to point out that yes, the episode was very entertaining and your segment was fantastic. But when you brought up bronies to them, they look like deer in headlights.
I know,
and maybe you're part of the herd yourself.
They cut out so much.
Where's that cricket sound now, Mike?
Yeah, I know. They
maybe
cut
you're
out
part of the herd.
They cut out so much of that. There was one take that I did with Walter. And he's like, and I forget how it led up to it, but he's like, I said to Walt, like, you're an arrogant prick. And everybody on set was like, what the fuck did he just say? Oh, sorry. Now we're hard R. Now we're hard R. And like, even like the director, I could hear him audibly gasp, and that got cut. And one of the other
really?
It was such a great reaction because then Brian Johnson jumped in on it.
What did he say? I have to know.
Oh, I can't remember what it was, but everyone, it broke the concentration. Everyone just started laughing.
My personal favorite moment, and it's not to laugh at your experience, but my personal favorite moment was when Zapsik noticed your tattoo.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that because I've known this tattoo and I've known you're a brony and everything. And while I'm not a brony myself, I have watched a couple episodes of the My Little Pony Friendship is Magic cartoon to see what it was at least all about.
Mm-hmm.
And I can understand, and I've watched the trailer for the documentary, and I can understand why there's an appeal, you know, for the show. So to see you attempt to educate these comic book men, and thank God Smith, you know, clarified in the wraparound podcast bits that they do. But it was enjoyable. It was fun seeing you on there.
Yeah. And
thank God you had that artist print. Or
I know, eh?
Like they said, it would have been a long trip for nothing.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing that got cut, and I'm pretty sure I can talk about this. They wanted to buy Derpy Hooves. They would have bought the really expensive San Diego Comic-Con pony. They were ready to.
Conspiracy revealed.
Yeah, I know. Walt made me an offer of $100. I'm thinking, I don't know, I paid $140 for this, so screw that. But another thing that got cut, and this was a really funny zinger. We were talking about cutie marks, and Walt asked me, what would everybody's cutie mark be? And I'm going around the room, and then Brian Johnson looks to Ming. Ming looks to Brian Johnson. He's like, so what would your cutie mark be? And just deadpan, your mom's face. Everybody broke up laughing.
Nice.
But yeah, so that was really cool.
I don't know if you're allowed to talk about this, so okay. I'll say this. How much of that
is scripted?
Was scripted? How much of that was actually you guys negotiated prices beforehand? Did you actually negotiate the price for the statue live there for the first time?
Yes.
Or did... Okay, so it wasn't like you came in, showed him the stuff, and was like, okay, what do you want to buy it for? And then you worked it out there, and then you made it look good for the camera.
No. It was actually a lot of it. Like, we did a couple of run-throughs, and then they were recording them anyway.
Okay.
So
reality
they cut together.
TV, folks.
So, well, that's how they get all the different angles. And, I was offered $125, and I'm like, okay, I'll take $125, and how about you give me that iPhone case? And this iPhone case that I have on the back of my phone is the Secret Stashes one.
Oh, nice.
And it's worth $40. So I walked out of there with over $160. Nice. So
and you got autographs for my Car Crawfordy set.
I did. And it's funny, Brian Johnson then said, you know, he calls you a prick and then he gets you to the side of his comics. I'm like, yeah.
Oh, he did the comics after?
No. Yeah. Nice. So, yeah.
You should check to see if those don't say, you're an arrogant prick, Walt Flanagan.
No, I looked. They just have Walt Flanagan. But Walt was very... liberal with his signature.
He's a lot nicer in person than he ever is portrayed on the show.
Well, that's because he doesn't really want to be in the spotlight. I've listened to a lot of Kevin Smith podcasts and stuff, and he's really like he was against doing the show at first because he doesn't want any of that spotlight stuff, you know. And that's what he's always said, and that's why a lot of the appearances, unless it's a big thing where they're doing the whole cast,
he doesn't do it.
And even the podcast that they do that ties into it, usually it's just Ming, Zapsik, and maybe,
Rob Bruce.
That do it, because Brian and Walt just usually don't. The only podcast they really do is the Tell 'Em Steve Dave podcast.
Now, that's another thing, too. I met Rob Bruce, too, on the set that day as well. He's a really nice guy, and I think
he seems like it, honestly.
I know a lot more about Star Wars stuff than he does, which really surprised me.
For a pop culture guru?
Yeah, I'm like, because he brought out this, like, FX saber, and I heard him talking, I'm thinking, no, you are wrong. Why? Because look at the circuit board. I can tell you that just by looking at it. Nerd!
I was just going to say, at the risk of cutting this short, there is one show you didn't mention that I wanted to get into and kind of move along and transition into movies, or if there's any shows that you missed. One show that I've been really digging this year and I've been watching from the get-go is Supernatural. Well, I shouldn't say I've been watching it from the beginning, is that I started picking up DVDs and I caught up at like season 6. Season 6 and 7 saw a real downswing.
Well, that's because Kripke had left the show.
Exactly. Yeah. And technically, the story was written for 5 seasons, but it had such great ratings. CW didn't want it to end and everything, so they kept going with it. Season 6 was also the year of the writer's strike, so it was a short season.
Yep.
I actually thought season 7... I probably disliked season 7 more than season 6. Season 8 started a slow kind of climb back into, you know, being kind of what it was like. And season 9 that they're in now... is continuing that. I still don't feel like it's as good as those first few seasons were, but I'm more invested in this story than I was in like season 7.
You know, there's another show that just by you talking about that made me think of this. This is a surprising. I mean, it's I don't know whether you guys know this. I hate sitcoms, flaming passion, almost every single one. And then I caught one this year I didn't expect to like or love as much as I do.
Two Broke Girls?
No. Unless it's Kat Denning topless, I don't care.
Please, no,
it's called The Goldbergs.
I've heard good things about that. I haven't seen it. But it's
like this 80s comedy narrated by Patton Oswalt. And it's about this kid named Adam Goldberg and his experiences growing up. It happens in 1980-something, so some of the details will be wrong, and that's on purpose because you don't always remember everything. And it's got such heart to it, and they've got so many pop culture references into it. Like, there's Optimus Prime. There's a GoBot carrier. There's an episode based around the USS flag that's coming up. And it's just ridiculous the amount of things that are in this show for nerds. And I interviewed the writer and the creator of the show, Adam Goldberg, a few weeks ago. And it's one of the few shows on television that I think takes nerds seriously again.
Yeah.
Like, Big Bang Theory is a big middle finger to us now. Freaking hate that show.
Oh, come on. Doesn't everyone in the comic shop here freak out when a girl comes in?
We have four of them sitting up front right now. Mind you, they're all our wives or girlfriends or whatever. But yeah, it's so, I don't know. I think this year's been really friendly to geek kind. I can't think of any shows that are really talking down to us right now.
Oh, yeah, it is that guy. Okay, yeah, I know Adam Goldberg.
Yeah, he wrote Fanboys.
Anything television-wise?
Television, no, but I want to move on to movies.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's Adam
Goldberg. I do want to touch on one quick show.
Okay, yeah, go.
One quick show. I have thoroughly been enjoying Sleepy Hollow.
Yes.
I've heard weird things about it.
In all seriousness, you know what? Sleepy Hollow is like a weird hybrid of a show like, say, Supernatural or The X-Files and a crime procedural like, say, Elementary, which is also another pretty good show. But no, I agree. I forgot to mention that one. Sleepy Hollow, I had mixed feelings about for the premise.
I heard it started off really cheesy.
It kind of did, but
it grew on you really quick.
It found its footing by probably it found its footing by episode 3, and my wife and I watch it every week. We love it. It's a great show.
What about that show Dracula? I've heard really messed up things about that.
I haven't watched it, and I had no intention of watching it whatsoever.
I want to check out Almost Human because I really like
it. The first episode of that started really good, but then it kind of lost where they were going with it already.
You think it'll make it to mid-season?
Yeah, I think it will, but not for the reasons that it should have. I liked the tension between the two main characters, but by the end of the first episode, it just turned into another buddy cop show.
Yeah. I did now, actually, now that we've been talking, there is one show that I do recommend that everyone check out, which is Hannibal. On NBC. Hannibal.
And they shot that here in Orangeville, parts of it.
Yeah, it's an amazing... Really cool. It is probably one of the best film television shows I've ever seen. Like, it's every shot and every setup has a purpose. There's a lot of thematic stuff going on underneath the surface. But at the same time, it's also telling... You think that something like The Silence of the Lambs and Hannibal Lecter is a relatively played-out concept. It's like there's only so much you can do with serial killers. Mm-hmm. But it really does build off of everything, and every episode builds on the other one, and there's a whole lot of really gorgeous shots in it.
Nice.
It is really well done. It just by the skin of its teeth made it to a second season, which it really deserves, and it's really worth checking out. Right. Even for the most disturbing food porn shots. Like, they film food really well in that show.
Like the intro to Dexter.
Yeah.
Where he's, slicing up his breakfast and everything.
But where that is, a put-on, this is legitimate, you don't know what this food is.
Oh, right. Yeah.
It's really, really well done.
It's a bunch of fava beans and a nice Chianti.
That's what I'm saying. So, to move on to movies.
Yes.
I only have two choices for everyone around this table. Iron Man 3 or Man of Steel?
Iron Man 3.
Good or bad?
If I had to pick one to watch.
Leave it to you.
It's hard for me to say. I had the opposite reaction to these movies. Iron Man 3 is well known for the longtime followers of Beyond the Gauntlet as being the introductory episode of our podcast where Chris, Mike, and I kind of dissected the movie a little bit and talked about what we thought of it. And my reaction was I walked out of the theater and enjoying it.
But the more
I thought about it, the more things I found wrong and didn't like it. I can say, though, after a second viewing, because I picked up the Blu-ray, and after a second viewing, didn't dislike it as much. The things that I didn't like, for example, the Mandarin scene, which I'm going to leave at that in case there is somebody who still hasn't seen it.
I love that scene so much.
I thought that was fun.
Those who know about it know what I'm talking about. That I enjoy now. And when I first saw it, it's not even that... It's hard to say because, the portrayal and the acting in the scene was fantastic.
Oh, so good. Yeah.
I was disappointed because, and I said this in that episode, was that, oh, hell, screw it. Spoilers if you haven't seen Iron Man 3. I thought Kingsley did such a great job of the Mandarin character.
Yeah.
It was sad to see that go.
But I would argue that that's what's so great about it.
But on the same token, he did such a great job of Trevor Slattery as well. So I can't argue that, and it was all right, and it still has its flaws for sure.
Although Guy Pearce should never be your end game as a bad guy. I'm just saying.
Also, seriously, breathing fire.
Yeah, that was so stupid.
Brother was wearing an AIM T-shirt. He gets an infinite power.
However, on the Superman topic,
in regards to Man of Steel.
Okay, to Man of Steel, there was a lot of things that I thoroughly enjoyed. The fan service in this movie was amazing. The John Brynn, the Last Son of Krypton, the all this stuff that it crammed into the movie was like a nerdgasm for anybody who was a Superman fan. However, the utter destruction of Metropolis and the blatant love story that wasn't really there, And the symbolism that was askewed.
I'm sorry, symbolism? I didn't see any symbolism in that.
Really?
There wasn't. It must have been very subtle.
It must have been hidden under all of Jeff's Batman comics.
I don't know. You mean the symbolism where he's sitting in front of a church window and Jesus' head is right behind him? Or when he goes off in crucifix pose off the ship and continually mentions that he's 33?
I was talking about S meaning hope.
Oh, right, right. Or S meaning Sears also is another viable option.
And 7-Eleven and IHOP.
And also S is 7-Eleven and yep. PsyHop.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it was just
I had slightly opposite reaction to Man of Steel that I had of Iron Man 3 in that I walked out of the theater. Which I watched with you, Jamie.
Yep.
And we both really picked it apart. And then as the days passed afterwards, I found the stuff that I didn't like about it didn't hold as much weight. Now, I also said after I watched it that I was kind of holding out for I felt it deemed a second viewing, which I still have yet to do. It was one of the things, you know, I'll get to. I have yet to actually watch it again. But I would like to. But there's certain things I found after, you know, the complaints about the movie really started. A lot of the things that people complained about the most, I didn't have a problem with. Again, spoilers. I had no issue with him killing Zod. Not because, Superman should be able to kill.
Yeah,
I'm not
yeah.
It's not that. His reaction after he did it, like he was devastated that he had to do this and everything. And a lot of people are complaining that it's like, oh yes, he saved this family, but look at all the buildings that fell. But at the same time, how many people died in the battle in New York in Avengers?
Yeah, I think that,
you know,
here's my thing on the whole neck snap thing. Okay, Superman has always had the Phantom Zone as a way to dispose of people he wanted to kill but he couldn't kill.
Sorry, I just imagine the Phantom Zone is like his garbage disposal.
It is, though.
Why isn't this switch working?
I kind of picture the Phantom Zone as dropping someone off at like the side of the road. It's that cosmic puppy.
Go boy, you're free now.
But this is the thing, though. They set up that the Phantom Zone wasn't what it really is in this movie, and that Zod escaped it in the ship, and it was the Phantom Zone was something. So he didn't have that option. So his only option was to kill Zod.
Yeah.
For me, I don't think it was even like. I have watched it twice. I watched it again with my brother who'd never seen it.
Actually, I don't even think I've discussed it with you since the
guys, we need to do a commentary for Man of Steel. Put that out there.
It'll just be me swearing.
It'll be you and me cursing most of it.
The second time, to be fair, the second time I wasn't so much angry as I was bored. which I guess is an improvement. But I kind of would rather have that visceral response to it. I watched it.
It's stages
like,
of denial. You're working through angry, and now you're like.
I'm in resignation. I don't even know what stage
you've
that
accepted
is. It's the same thing like I was talking about with DC, where I'm just like, yeah, you know, they're doing their thing, whatever. I'm not in any way connected to it. I can talk about what I liked and what I didn't like. Mostly it was stuff I didn't like. I enjoyed Iron Man 3. It was fun as hell.
To be honest, out of all the movies that did come out this year, I think I enjoyed Thor Dark World even more than that.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, God.
Oh, my God, yes.
But you know what the most forgettable movie was this year in terms of big superhero movies was? The Wolverine.
I'm sorry, did that come out?
Yeah, exactly. No one cared.
That's because it's not tied in with all the Avengers stuff and everything because they're owned by Fox.
But it's Wolverine.
I enjoyed the Wolverine.
See,
I like it better than the
director's cut's way better.
So yeah.
It's much better than the theatrical.
I enjoyed
the
Wolverine. I thought it was great, and it was a fantastic. They set up the Days of Future Past, which I thought was great. I think one of the things, actually, again, with Iron Man 3 was that it was took place at Christmas time, but came out in like June or July. Honestly, it sounds silly, but watching it in the theater, that took me out of it.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's why I might have enjoyed it a little better the second time, which was in November, a little bit closer to Christmas.
But I really, really liked Thor.
It was one of the more fun Marvel movies. Yeah.
It was probably my favorite superhero movie of the year, for sure.
And And the Chris Hemsworth Captain America cameo was...
That was hilarious.
That was great.
And even the 5 minutes of Winter Soldier before the fight scene. And
that just made me want to see that movie even more.
Unreal.
So much, yeah.
And even I was super stoked for the Collector cameo.
I know you're such a Guardian fan.
This was like, I cannot wait, and this is kind of jumping ahead to like 2014, but I cannot wait for this Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
It's got my attention.
Benicio del Toro is going to be chewing the scenery, and it's going to be perfect.
My only complaint with Thor: The Dark World, and this is entirely personal preference. This isn't a complaint with the film.
Yeah.
I've always, since the first one, I believe that Thor chose wrong. Sif is awesome. Screw Jane Foster. Sif rules.
She would have been a better Wonder Woman.
One of the things that fell under the radar this summer was Kick-Ass 2. That was a lot of fun.
I didn't get to see that one yet. I'll have to.
Well, that's what's interesting. I heard really mixed reviews.
I liked it. I thought it was great.
I'm not a fan.
The first one did the same thing. The first one actually got legs on DVD. From what I hear, it didn't do tremendously well in the theaters either. And that's what I've been waiting for, the Kick-Ass 2 DVD, because that's how I saw the first one. And I'll probably watch it and see. I mean, it's
he's
one
our
of those
Quicksilver,
ones...
so we got to at least
be
aware
exactly.
of what he's going to be doing. I hope at some point the two Quicksilvers meet.
Yeah, who knows? We'll see.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else in movies that really kicked ass this year. One thing that I saw during the summer, which is unexpected, it's not comic booky, but it's nerdy. I saw a movie called The Conjuring this year. Fantastic.
It was very good. I don't normally like the sort of found footage thing that they were going for, but I thought it was relatively clever.
Yeah.
And the fact that Peter Mann was the father was kind of cute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It worked out so well, and the fact that they took the Warren story so seriously, and it was well cast.
Yeah, relatively realistic. That was pretty clever.
The Conjuring was good. Back to another movie that that I felt like shooting myself in the head after seeing, after hoping so desperately for it to be good, was the second Star Trek movie.
Nothing but disappointment.
I wanted that movie to be good so bad, and then it...
It was so bad, not good.
Cumberbatch was a good con, though.
Okay. That's the thing with him, is you can put Cumberbatch in any role, and he's going to... I'm looking forward to him as Smaug in friggin' Hobbit, too. But, like...
Let's cast him in the next Home Alone, just saying.
You know, I think
as the kid?
Yes.
I honestly think that Cumberbatch could probably maybe pull off like Doctor Strange.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I could see that.
He'd be great.
As Doctor Strange in a Doctor Strange movie. Like, that man can go into any role and pull it off. So he was the only good thing in the movie.
Yeah.
The entire movie was just a travesty from start to finish.
I liked Zachary Quinto up until he did the COD scream. That was so stupid. I remember in the theater, I actually said out loud, "What the hell?" And everybody in the theater, I swear to God, simultaneous head slap. It was so...
One movie that I liked this year that I felt didn't get the attention it deserved.
Lone Ranger.
Pacific Rim.
Yeah, that movie was awesome.
Yeah, I haven't actually seen it.
What person just doesn't enjoy going and watching giant robots beat up giant
monsters?
And
Ron Perlman is in it. Come on. I mean, it had its flaws. It's not a perfect movie by any means. I felt it should have done...
It was fun.
I hoped it was more successful than it actually wound up being. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
It's getting a sequel, so that's what matters.
Exactly.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Atlantic
and Rim. Not bad for a guy who quote unquote has never seen Neon Genesis Evangelion or Gundam.
All right, now we're probably going a little long. Do we want to do some maybe movie
just keep going. Let's just keep going.
Trying
to think what sucked this year or what really sucked. Like, what was your number one disappointment this year?
I didn't in terms see of a ton of movies and I was kind of choosy, so there wasn't a whole lot that I was like, that was terrible. I mean, you know, we already talked Man of Steel and Iron Man 3.
I would say that for the most part, like I tried to avoid things that were going to actively disappoint me. I did really, if we're going to talk sort of extra media, I want to talk about my absolute favorite video game of this year.
Last of Us?
Which was Lego Marvel. Lego Marvel games. So good.
The Lego games have always been fantastic. I've played Lego Batman, Lego Star Wars, and I want to get that Lego Marvel one. I just haven't yet.
Lego Marvel is this perfect mix of catering to fans, but at the same time being just a fun game. There are the unlockable characters, like you have
so many of them.
So like Black Bolt is there, and they animated like he's not just a new skin for another character. His power is to yell, and he has his own sound effect for his yell. The whole Guardians of the Galaxy are in there.
You can
unlock the FF costumes from Hickman's run for all the Fantastic Four, which is just genius.
Oh yeah, is that the one with the face mask?
The white. Yeah. With the three logos. And it's just everything is perfect. It's so much fun. Like, it's been the longest time that I've sat down and want to get through every single part of the game. Like, I want to know where everything is. Mm-hmm. I want to get, like, completely involved in this game. And it's been a long time since that's happened for me with video games.
Well, speaking of video games, one that I really enjoyed this year, it would have been nice if it had a little more legs. I mean, I guess there's the downloadable content and everything. And it is a fighting game, so they only last so long. But Injustice, Gods Among Us, when I first saw the trailers for it, I thought it was great. The story for it was fantastic. It was a great story mode. Great engine for it for fighting games. You know, it's really the same people that did the more recent Mortal Kombat, correct?
Yep. Yeah, it's NetherRealm, yeah.
Yeah. So it was fantastic. I thought it was just great. A lot of great characters in there. I mean, obviously, it would have been nice if they had a few more. There's a couple fan favorites, but I mean, you're not going to please everyone.
Yeah. I was slightly disappointed that Boone promised much more downloadable characters and didn't do it.
Well, we got a bunch. We got Martian Manhunter.
Yeah, but he was saying, like, all leading up to the game that there's going to be 12 downloadable characters, downloadable stages. It's going to be an even mix of male and female characters. And then we got Scorpion and four others, and that was it.
I wonder if maybe it was a budgetary thing. Maybe they were hoping that first batch was going to sell better than it did. So because it didn't, they didn't make any more.
Oh, give me a break. They had those characters already done.
I'm just spitballing here.
They're done because their code was in the game. People that have decoded it.
Okay, yeah, that's fine. But the game as a whole, though, you know, off the shelf, as a whole, was very enjoyable.
It was fantastic. And the great thing that I liked about the Injustice game, too, when you were done with story mode and just your classic arcade, which had, you know, 15 different game modes to it as far as, you know, the different things you could do.
Yeah,
it also
had the Star Labs
missions.
Yeah.
And the Star Labs missions were just like mini games that you could do that every character in the game had 10 of them.
Yeah.
So when you took the 24 base characters and then the 5 added characters, that gave you a lot of mini games.
Yeah, you're not going to be bored with it.
So as far as, you know, I'm sure most nerd types, you know, unless you hate DC, have probably, you know, played or picked this game up. And I couldn't say enough nice things about it. Now, again, Lego Marvel is one I really want to pick up because I've played Lego games before.
Yeah.
And there isn't a bad thing you can say about the Lego games. They're always fun.
They're a little repetitive recently, but Marvel Lego changed that.
Yeah.
They did a lot with it.
Fixed a lot of the things that people had issues with.
Yeah.
And it's really, the hub world alone, it's just fun to swing around as like Spider-Man, and they have Superior Spider-Man as one of the characters, and they've got like just they've covered all of their bases, and it's so much fun just to suddenly like switch up. Suddenly, you're Groot just marauding through the streets, taking out all the cars. It's
wonderful,
really, really fun.
For games this year, obviously, I play games for a living. This will be my game of the decade, honestly, is The Last of Us. You could not ask for a more satisfying game experience, at least in terms of storytelling and narrative, and just it's literally, I think, as close that games have come to art in a really long time.
Now, that just to make sure or to clarify for anyone else, that's the game that Ellen Page has her likeness and a character in. Yes,
It's not based on Ellen Page, but you can definitely see
it's very similar.
Yeah, very, very similar.
Like, I mean, I heard she was doing the voice, and then I saw the picture, and it's not like you don't have to guess which one is supposed to be Ellen Page voicing it.
Well, no, she didn't voice it. It was actually the daughter.
Oh, it was just based on. Okay.
No, she voiced a game called Beyond Two Souls, which just came out a few weeks ago. It was voiced by The guy who did Bioshock Infinite is Booker, Troy Baker.
Okay.
It's one of the best performances I've ever seen in a video game. It's, if you don't cry at the end of that game, you're not human. But the game that surprised me the most, because me and Grand Theft Auto have had a very on and off relationship. I love Vice City. Best soundtrack in the series, hands down. But the gameplay was, I didn't much care for San Andreas. Four was okay, but I got bored. Five is the only Grand Theft Auto experience that I've played from start to finish and was never bored for a minute. I've never had a game do that. Plus the online, it's okay. But yeah, that really surprised the hell out of me. Trying to think what else has really been good.
How's the new Assassin's Creed?
Love it. Oh my God. I didn't like any of the previous Assassin's Creed until I played the fourth one. And I'm like, oh my God, Edward Kenway is the shit. I love this guy. I bought all the DLC for it immediately. I did all the side missions before I tackled the main missions. I felt so badass, like swinging on the pirate ships, drop kicking people, swords, and just guns blazing. It was so much fun. Like, oh my God. Like, I seriously, I'm talking with Blair, my wife. We haven't taken our honeymoon yet, despite we got married a couple years ago. I'm trying to pitch the idea of going to Cuba and doing a pirate-themed adventure day. I want to go on a tall ship and do that stuff. That looks so freaking cool. So, yeah.
All right. So, serious question for you, Mike, because yes. I know you have played both. PS4 or Xbox One right out of the gate?
Xbox One. And that really surprises me to say.
X-Bone.
Because you know what? The PS4 is cool, but it's there's nothing for it. You have Knack and Shadowfall and a few games on PSN that are exclusives, and neither blows my socks off. Killer Instinct on Xbox One, fantastic launch. Shitty execution with here, pay $20 to get all the characters. Pay $40 and get the original Killer Instinct arcade game, which I did. But the ports are just more solid. And what I mean by that is, if you had to play Battlefield 4 on a PS4, good luck. That's what I did. I haven't been able to play it for 3 days because DICE is delaying the patch for it. DICE has openly said, we're not developing any more DLC content until we fix this game. Why the hell did you launch it in the first place? And the thing is, I hate Kinect. Oh my God, do I hate Kinect. But it works now. Literally, I can walk into my living room. Xbox on, turns on. Xbox, go to YouTube. It does it. It knows exactly what I'm doing. It's so cool. It really, really surprised me. Although you have to buy a charge kit. They don't tell you that out of the gate. Because that thing eats batteries. Other than that, yeah, I mean, that's what I'd recommend. The ports on Xbox One are generally just more stable, but it's definitely becoming, both systems are trying to be this
all-in-one
entertainment thing. And the cool thing is, I like watching TV through my Xbox One. I can go through my guides with it. I can just, my PVR works through it. I'm really, really impressed.
All right, so let's go around the table and come up with something we're looking forward to in 2014 and maybe call that an episode.
Sounds good.
Man, I'm trying to think.
What are you looking forward to?
Jamie will start.
Days of Future.
There's no question. Guardians of the Galaxy. I am so freaking stoked for this movie. I mean, it's been a long time since I've been excited for not only a movie, but like all the potential weird merchandising tie-ins. Like there will be Lego, and I am so freaking stoked.
Guardians pop heroes.
There's so much potential for this. I like James Gunn as a director. I think it's going to be really fun. I think it's going to be weird. I think it has potential to be like this sort of weird ancillary Marvel movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think also with a lot of the Marvel Now books coming out, there's a lot of really great, like the Silver Surfer series coming up, the new Captain Marvel series, which is more of a cosmic focus, the Moon Knight with Warren Ellis. The relaunch of Daredevil. There's a lot of really great Marvel books in the pipes as well. So those are the two big things that I've got.
Jeff, what about you?
There's so many great movies coming
out. Oh my God, is there ever?
Guardians is one. Not too long ago, the first Amazing Spider-Man 2 trailer came out. Then we were talking about Captain America the Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
But for my money, the one I'm looking forward to the most
is Frankenstein.
Got to be... X-Men Days of Future
Past. Yes.
So much. Oh my God, I can't wait.
I just want Sentinels, man, killing everything.
From the post-credit thing at the end of Wolverine to the Trask Industries commercial that
Peter
they
Dinklage.
Aired, where you get to see some of the Sentinels. And it's like, I realize it's not going to be the classic story. They're going to change things up and everything. But just to see Xavier pep-talking Xavier, and just to get the best parts of the cast of both, for lack of a better term, generational movies.
Like, and
to get Fassbender and McKellen, to get Patrick Stewart and McAvoy, to get Hugh Jackman, to get
and let's not
the casts together is just
and
fantastic.
Let's not forget Bryan Singer's announcement that 2016 is going to be X-Men Apocalypse.
Yeah. By the way, I'd also like to thank Bryan Singer for such a fantastic birthday present, because yeah, May 27th I'll be turning 37, and I will be I will be center of that theater watching X-Men Apocalypse.
Now, have you heard about rumored post-credit scene from Days of Future Past that ties into
It doesn't surprise me, obviously. Days of Future Past, that's the other reason. I mean, I was already stoked for it to begin with, but
yeah.
The studio must have a lot of faith in this movie to be green-lighting
the sequel already.
Yeah, yeah. And to not just green-lighting, but having Singer announce it like this. I read some rumor. Apparently, Hugh Jackman said he's not sure if he's going to play Wolverine after this. He said that before.
They're going to drive a boatload of money to his house, go, come on, Hugh, how much you want? Come on. Mm-hmm. Although, rumor is the post-credit scenes for Days of Future Past will show Magneto becoming Apocalypse, which I think is so stupid. See, Mega Onslaught, and I'm okay.
Yeah.
One other thing, this isn't movie-related, but another thing I'm terribly, terribly looking forward to and chomping at the bit because it's going to be so long since the end of the first season is the return, this is television, the return of Gravity Falls.
Yes.
Oh, such a fantastic cartoon.
No, that was an accident. Lies. That was an accident.
Lies. Such a fantastic cartoon and a Disney cartoon. If you haven't watched the first season, try to find it online, or they've got a DVD of the first 6 episodes. It's so smartly
written. I hear it's amazing.
It is a fantastic, really amazing cartoon. I can't say enough nice things about this. And unfortunately, it took over a year for the first season of 20 episodes to air. There was a lot of gaps, and creator Alex Hirsch even said after it was done that there was going to be a year hiatus before they even started season 2. Kristen Schaal, who is a fantastic comedian and actress, a lot of people would know her as Louise from Bob's Burgers, another fantastic cartoon, by the way. She voices one of the main characters. Jason Ritter voices the other, which is Dipper and Mabel, their twin children. And it is a fantastic show. I don't have enough nice things to say about it. So I believe that's supposed to come back in October of 2014. So that, and X-Men Days of Future Past, and then fast forward a couple years to my birthday, and I get X-Men Apocalypse, and I will die a happy man.
You're going to feel so silly when that asteroid hits next year.
Not if it's Asteroid M.
Oh.
So looking forward to 2014 myself. February, coming up soon. RoboCop. I am so cautiously optimistic about this. I want to love this.
Ever since I saw him get blown up by his car, I'm just like,
You know what? There's got to be more to it.
Yeah.
There really does. I'm really hoping that doesn't suck. I'm really looking forward to the Lego movie to have Batman and the Ninja Turtles team up. That's going to be awesome. Another thing that I'm looking forward to is Muppets Most Wanted.
Yeah,
I was surprised how much I loved the original Muppets movie that came out a couple years ago.
I feel that one, I think it'll be successful, but I don't think it'll be as successful as the last movie. Because the last movie was really the reemergence of the Muppets on the big screen. Mm-hmm. So I feel like a lot of people that went to see that first one will kind of be like, well, we've seen that. It's okay.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you look at like the guest stars in this and everything, it'll still be successful enough. I'm not saying it's going to tank by any means, but I don't know if it's going to be as successful as that last Muppets movie.
Last two movies I'm looking forward to really is Transformers 4, Age of Extinction. One word, Dinobots.
I got to admit, I am too. I'm one of those few people who doesn't hate the first ones as much as a lot of other people. A lot of people, you know, there's a lot of hate for the Transformers movies. I dig.
I can look at them for what they are. Yeah, exactly. I mean,
it's same as the G.I. Joe movies.
Yeah, they're fun.
Kind of schlocky at times. You don't go in there expecting them to be cinematic masterpieces.
Yeah, exactly. And lastly, I guess one's a very quick thing because it comes out not too long after Guardians, the Ninja Turtles reboot.
Oh, that's right.
Platinum Dunes. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm more looking forward to the toys because I'm pretty good friends with the Chief Turtle Officer over at Playmates.
I never thought I would hear.
I know, it's weird because that's his official title on his business cards. It's really weird. And then finally, for me, Expendables 3.
Cool.
Right on. Oh my God, Dolph Lundgren and Wesley Snipes on the same screen kicking ass. That's going to be so cool. I'm such a fanboy. And supposedly, the Sin City sequel comes out next year.
Dame to Kill For,
yeah. So, we'll see. We'll wait and see. But yeah, that's some of the big stuff I'm looking forward to.
How about
to.
You, Chris?
I think you guys got it all.
What about
Chris, sorry to steal your thunder there.
Chris's most wanted movie of 2014 is Dumb and Dumber 2.
No. Actually, if I was to pick something that you guys haven't named,
Annie?
I'm very, very interested to see what Dwayne The Rock Johnson does with the Seven Trials of Hercules.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, it's funny you mention that. As of this recording, TMZ spoke to Kevin Sorbo, the original Hercules, and the people involved in both the new Hercules, one with Kellan Lutz and then with The Rock, they both hung up on him. Huh. Like, that's Kevin Sorbo, man. He deserves at least a background cameo. Come on. He'll always be my Hercules. I love you, Kevin.
Sorry, mine's the one that talks to the centaur and Toot.
Oh, yeah. And the guy with, like, the bucket on his head. What the hell is it? Daedalus or whatever? Anyway, we should wrap this up, guys. Yeah. We've been yakking.
It's been a little long, but you know what?
You got a double episode, more or less.
There we go.
You can't review a year in an hour.
You can. It's just really concise.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's not how we roll.
Yeah, exactly.
Nope, not at all.
If we can blabber, we will. So what are we going to be talking about in 2014, guys?
I think the next episode we're going to do is...
casting calls?
We're doing casting calls. We want to have our wish list of who we think should play comic characters or who did good jobs and who would have done better jobs.
RoboCop, just saying.
RoboCop for everything.
Yes, RoboCop for everything. RoboCop as Wonder Woman.
Jaws 5. RoboCop.
All right, guys. So for Beyond the Gauntlet, hopefully you guys will have a fantastic 2014. It's the beginning of the year. Let's start this one off right. So for Beyond the Gauntlet, I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd with...
Jamie McBurney.
I'm Jeff DeHaan, and I cannot wait for my 37th birthday.
And Chris Peddle, owner and operator of the Gauntlet, and a Happy New Year, everyone.
RoboCop!